The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone. And it's a pleasure to come and sit with you this evening. I hope it was nice for you. What I had in mind to talk about today is a really basic topic for mindfulness, for Buddhism, Buddhist practice, and that is mindfulness of the body. The importance of paying attention to your body, being embodied as you do this practice. And it's one of the, I think, really important lessons that I have had through my years of practice. It's important to coming back, paying attention to my body, coming back to my body, being in my body, being connected to my body. There's one of the principles of Buddhism is that the real book of Buddhism, if you like to read a lot and really discover the truth of Buddhism in a book, that book is inside of you. There's not a book on the bookshelf that you're going to find that's really going to do it for you, but you have to kind of learn how to turn around and see all the lessons, all the truths, all the possibilities of practice in your own body. That's where it resides, so much of it. And that's a message that I didn't receive when I first was introduced to Buddhism, partly because I was introduced to it through books, and it seemed like a lot of it was somewhat intellectual, some heady or using the head. But then once I started practicing Buddhism, the practice, of course, is something you do with your body. You just sit taking the meditation posture, for example. When I was new to practice, this was not a ordinary posture for me to sit in. And so I had to kind of put my body in a particular posture. And they say it's a yogic posture to sit this way, cross-legged on the floor. And so you bring your body along to do something with your body. And there were certainly plenty of times in my early years where I thought I could happily ignore my body, but that didn't work very well. It kept wanting, kept knocking at the door, saying, "Hey, pay attention here." And then I came across a teacher in Thailand who said something that was kind of pivotal for me in understanding my relationship to the body. It was a famous teacher named Ajahn Buddhadasa, and he's now dead, but one of the great, great teachers of the 20th century in Thailand. And I was going to sit a retreat at his monastery, and he gave the opening talk, and he spoke English, so he wasn't going to be much involved with the whole retreat, but he gave the opening talk in English, and I don't remember a word of the talk. I'm sure it was a great talk. But we were kind of outdoors, a kind of amphitheater, and the way it happened was that when it was over, something like, he was walking by me, or I was walking by him, and then he just said, like an afterthought, like he'd had meant to say it, but hadn't gotten around to it in the formal talk. He kind of said in a low voice, he said, "Don't do anything that takes you out of your body." And that caught my attention. It was the last thing I heard. I went into silence for the 10-day retreat, and I wondered why did he say that. And so I started paying attention to my body, which is often what's a good thing to do in Buddhism, is if you hear a teaching, don't stay in the abstract about it, but turn in and see in yourself, can you find it relevant in yourself? Can you find how it plays out in yourself? And what I discovered was a real important lesson in this, don't leave your body, don't stay in touch with your body, was at this retreat center, during the retreat. The meditation hall was across the jungle a little bit, not too far, but kind of from where the dining hall was. And when it was lunchtime, you had to walk from the meditation hall to the dining hall. And now lunch is like one of the most important things happening on retreat. In terms of entertainment and action and something something interesting besides your own mind. And also, I think we only ate two meals a day. So lunch was, particularly significant. And so I found myself walking towards the dining room, And the sense I had, as I paid attention, was I was not in my body. Where I was about 2 feet ahead of my body, kind of like eager to get to that lunch, to get there. And I noticed, you know, kind of way, I was a little bit kind of not connected. I was a little bit dissociated from myself because of my desire and my focus on getting someplace rather than being here. And so then I would draw my attention back in, relax back into my body, and it felt very different to be centered and connected in my body. And then, you know, I would go a little bit longer, and the importance of lunch would loom up, and I would be ahead of myself again. And then I came back. And this process of losing myself, in a sense, losing touch with myself, being dissociated because of my desire, my eagerness, and then coming back was a very interesting lesson for me to go back and forth. It's perhaps a little bit similar. Maybe some of you had the experience of eagerly, happily eating a meal. Maybe it's a really good meal, really good food. And so the desire principle, the pleasure principle, is operating quite strongly for you. And so you want to have more. This is really great. And you enjoy it. This is great. You maybe enjoy the eating, enjoy the pleasure of it, maybe enjoy the conversation you're having with people. And you're kind of not... And then at some point, after the meal, you say, what did I do? Whoa. You know, this is really heavy. You know, I ate too much. And probably what happened is that, this is what happens to me sometimes, is that I'm not connected or associated with my body. I'm connected to my desires. I'm connected to my conversations, to my thoughts, to something else. I'm a little bit disembodied in the sense that I'm not connected to the sensations, the signals that my body is providing me of when I'm full. And I also know that if I stay connected while I eat, stay connected to my body, that I can feel a tipping point in my body where I feel that's enough. I've had enough. And it's usually well before I feel stuffed. I feel that's enough. But if I'm not paying attention, I'm not connected to my body and not tuning into those signals, it's easy to kind of barrel ahead. I'm ahead of myself in a sense. I'm disconnected. So those two examples perhaps you now can consider in your own life. Are there situations in your life where you're not connected or you're disassociated? Some people, it's because of their work. It's somewhat common for people who spend a lot of time on the computer in front of screens to not be so connected to their body, because chances are, involved with screen work, it's somewhat mental work. And you're focusing on this, you know, what's on the screen, and what's going on in your head. And sometimes you're not so connected to your body. And I've had people tell me that they spend, you know, day after day after day doing this kind of computer work. And the cost is they kind of lose touch with their body, lose touch with themselves, especially if it's long, long hours. Because one of the principles that that Buddhism teaches, I think is a common one, is that whatever you do frequently becomes a habit. Whatever you do frequently becomes a momentum in your mind, momentum in your life. So if you spend a lot of time being dissociated, disconnected, not connected to your body, then it becomes a habit. The momentum for doing that continues. And people could spend a lifetime not connected, kind of ahead of themselves in a certain kind of way. So how is it that the task of Buddhist practice, big part of it, is to come back. Is to come back and really inhabit our body, be here in our body. Some of you might know that the Buddha, when he was alive, he founded an order of monastics, monks and nuns. And he specifically did not appoint someone to be the head of the order after he died. It's a kind of interesting idea that he didn't make someone the head, and no one took over. It wasn't set up that way to have someone in charge. After he died, someone came to see one of the Buddha's main disciples named Ananda and said to Ananda, now that the Buddha is dead, who will be your teacher? And Ananda said, now that the Buddha is dead, our body, our mindfulness of the body is our teacher. Our body becomes our teacher. Your body can be your teacher. You can learn so much about your body, through your body by paying attention. There's so many signals, so much information. So much of what goes on in our minds and hearts plays itself out in our bodies. When we're tense in our mind, chances are you'll be tense someplace in your body. If you're anxious, which is somewhat mental and emotional, chances are it playing out in your body in some way. If you're happy, if you're compassionate, it plays out in your body. All the different impulses and emotions and thoughts that we get involved in tend to have some kind of manifestation in our body. If it's really gross, what's going on, really big actions of the mind or emotions, it's kind of obvious what's going on in the body. I mean, most of you are probably connected enough to your body to know some of the big things that go on when you're tense in some big way. You get a headache and it's pounding because whatever you're doing. But what advantage of mindfulness of the body, cultivating ability to stay connected in a subtle way to your body well, is you start picking up the subtle movements, not just the gross movements. And the subtle movements are not inconsequential. Sometimes the really important places of learning is in the small movements of the mind, movements of the heart and emotions that underlie the gross. So if you pay attention to your body, you start noticing subtle places where your body's held, where it's frozen, where it's tight, where you're disconnected, dissociated, where it's numb, where you're pushing, tightening, pulling back. There's all these little movements that go on in all the little musculatures in their body. And so our relationship to the world is often expressed through our body. And it can be a subtle, I mean, this is maybe, just to point out how it's always playing itself out, I think, for many people. I've noticed that if I'm walking down the sidewalk and no one's coming towards me on the sidewalk, my body will feel one way. But then someone else is walking down the sidewalk, not a particularly scary person or anything, but I feel that it can be a subtle shift in my body and how I feel. The person passes and my body shifts again, that there's a change. Or even more subtle, I've noticed, that when I'm, is that if I'm walking down the sidewalk on a sunny day, if I walk under the shade of a tree, my body shifts and changes. Somehow I'm affected by just the shade. Not just that it's cooler or nicer on a hot day. So there's all these changes that go on that you can start paying attention to and learning. And for sometimes, if you have a habit of staying connected to your body, it might be the first indication you have of what's going on in your mind. So it's happened to me a lot because I might get caught up in a conversation or caught up in a reaction that I'm having in a situation. And because it's become a habit of mine to check into my body, I don't notice that I'm caught up in something until I notice that I'm leaning forward or I've tightened up. Because the mental activity, it's kind of like a black hole sometimes. I don't know if you guys have black holes in your head, but I sometimes do. And a black hole, the light goes in and doesn't come out. The awareness goes in and doesn't come out. It's so important what I'm thinking about. But having a habit of coming back to my body, being in touch with my body, sometimes for me is the first indication I have that I'm a little bit imbalanced, I'm imbalanced, that I'm caught, is by some leaning, tightening going on in my body. It isn't just that the body teaches us where we're caught and where we're reactive, but the body can also teach us what it's like to be soft, to be relaxed, to be compassionate, to be kind, to be at peace. Those kind, compassionate, peaceful affect our body. In fact, not only affect our body, I would suggest they arise out of our body. And to the degree to which we're not in touch with our body, some of the most important emotions and feelings a person can have are not going to be accessible. You're not going to feel deep abiding peace. You're not going to feel deep abiding love, compassion, kindness, unless you have some ability, some connection, some sensitivity and awareness of what goes on in your body. To not be connected to your body and to live in your head and want to have joy and happiness, I don't think it works so well. And I think sometimes people who are disconnected to their body and are trying to find happiness and peace find themselves in a maze that they can't get out of because there's no way to find deep abiding peace unless you're somehow connected to your body, resting here in your body. So not only is the body a teacher, it's also a protection, a protector. Because as you get more sensitive and aware of what goes on in your body, you'll understand your reactions better, but you'll also understand the subtle feelings that happen in the body of what feels right and what feels wrong. If you're not in touch with your body, that information is not so accessible. There's a lot of things people do that didn't feel quite right. I felt kind of off doing that. I didn't feel quite right saying that to my friend, or I'm about to say something, and it just doesn't feel right. And there might be good logical and ethical reasons not to say certain things or do certain things, but sometimes it's ambiguous. But the body can provide you with a very good sense of what's going on, what needs to happen. The body is also the place for empathy. I believe that the beautiful quality of empathy, where we can tune into someone else and feel what's going on with them, is also dependent on our ability to be in touch with our own body. Because I think a lot of the cues or a lot of the ways in which the signals from other people are registered and fed back to our own awareness, our own knowing, is through kind of a mirroring or a sensing of how it feels like in our own body. And then we kind of have a better sense of what's going on with others. I think of the body as the great healer as well. The body has an amazing ability to come back to equilibrium if you give it a chance. And give it a chance means that just relax. Relax and stay present in your body and stop interfering, stop acting out, stop being caught up in what you're caught up in, and just stop and feel what's happening here. And this idea of coming back and just feeling the body over and over again is the heart of mindfulness of the body, sensing it, being present for it, discovering what's here. There's a great quote by the Buddha where he said, your body is old karma. Your job is to feel it. And how I understand this quote is that the physical body that you experience, how you experience yourself physically, if you close your eyes and sense and feel your body, the sensations that you feel are not independent of how you've lived your life. The choices you make, the selection process, the biases you have, there's a lot that goes on. So much so, I think it was, I was told it was Abraham Lincoln who said, by the time a person is 40, they're responsible for their face. So we have all these ways in which we hold ourselves in our face. There's a muscle, we hold certain muscles, certain cultures, different muscles in certain languages, different muscles come into play, and certain repetitive attitudes to life come into play, and they get embodied and kind of in our face, to some degree. So the idea of the old karma is the idea that how we lived our life, the intentions, the approaches, the attitudes that we've had, that get carried in our body, we hold in our body, are a big part of what we start experiencing when we pay attention to mindfulness of the body. And then the task, the Buddha said, is to feel it, is to be with it. Sometimes this is not so easy to do if you don't have a habit of it or a custom of it or a practice of it. If the custom and practice is to be disembodied, not connected to the body, then it can feel boring. It could feel besides the point. It could feel like we're missing out on something important. It can feel uncomfortable. There's a lot of things, a lot of message, a lot of ideas we can have about why it's not so great or hot or interesting to be present for our body. One of the strong ones is that it can be uncomfortable. If you've spent a long time not connected to your body and you're wound up in a certain kind of way with tension and holding, and it takes, and it can be uncomfortable to relax and settle into your body and feel it. And the task in this practice is to relax and connect to your body, feel it and be here in the body without trying to do anything about what you experience there. Just feel it more fully. If you're going to do anything at all, it's that, to feel it more fully. What is it? How is it right now? And then notice the tendencies to run away from it, to avoid it. Notice the tendencies to try to fix it, to push whatever the discomforts away, to try to make something better happen. There's all these ways in which we tinker with our lives and try to fix and change what's going on. It's not necessarily wrong to do those things, but the deeper, I think the more deeper and fuller possibilities of mindfulness meditation and mindfulness practice arise when you don't try so much to change what's going on, but you try just to open to it, to open to it, to be present for it, feel it more fully. And one of the reasons why it's so useful just to feel more fully, make space for it, don't interfere, open to what's there, is that the body has kind of a wisdom of its own. The body wants to come to equilibrium. The body wants to resolve and heal the tensions, the wounds that are here. And, you know, it's kind of simple, simplistic to describe this, how this works. The, if you make a really tight fist and try to hold it for a really, really long time, you have to keep reasserting your effort to keep the fist tight, because what the fist wants to do is to uncurl a little bit. You have to keep making an effort to keep it tight. So in the same way, all the tensions and holdings that we have in our body, what they want to do is to unwind, is to relax. And so if we can leave it alone and not interfere, not keep doing it and holding it, the body starts healing and relaxing. And it happens on many, many levels, that staying connected to the body is healing emotionally, psychologically, physically. Mindfulness of the body is also a great protector for overzealous meditators. Because if you're, a number of things can happen if you're overly zealot about meditation too, you know, like you're striving, I'm going to be the great meditator, I'm going to get concentrated. Is that sometimes when people have tried too hard to get concentrated, it's too mental. It's like, it becomes more like narrowing down of attention. And when the attention gets narrowed down, much of who we are gets left out. And the information, the cues the body can provide are no longer accessible. And sometimes I've known people who really focus to get concentrated and end up getting tense. Sometimes people even get headaches because they're trying so hard. It's possible to get dissociated with meditating the wrong way, getting focused. It's possible to get imbalanced in certain kinds of ways. But if your meditation includes a really strong dosage of mindfulness of the body, where you're resting in your body, being in your body, then it's hard to get dissociated. It's hard to ignore the important cues from your body about what you're doing that might be a little bit off. So what I like to say in terms of getting concentrated, which is an important part of Buddhist meditation, concentration for us is not a narrowing. It's actually an expanding, and expanding and relaxing in the center of that expanded sense of awareness. It's kind of like, I don't know, maybe like if you take a marble and you put it in a bowl and spin it around the edges or something, or back and forth, eventually it'll come and settle at the bottom of the bowl. It's centered at the bowl, but the whole bowl is holding it. So the concentration that I think is really healthy and healing is a concentration is very wide and holds it all, and then the mind can rest and relax like a marble, eventually coming to rest at the middle of it all. If you're only focusing on keeping the marble focused on it, then it becomes, you know, to change the analogy, I guess, it's more like, then it becomes like this needle that you're trying to stand upright by itself. It's just going to fall over and over. So the idea that paying attention to your body is a protector for meditation as well. That keeps your meditation whole, holistic, complete. So the last thing I want to say about this is another little important teaching that I received in my years of practice was when I read what the Zen master Dogen had to say, a Japanese Zen master, lived in the 1200s. He had a very interesting way of, when he wrote about Buddhism, to kind of turn phrases around upside down in various ways to give you a different perspective on what back then was kind of ordinary teachings. And so the idea of mindfulness of the body is teachings which are very common in Buddhism. It's gone you know, continued from the time of the Buddha down to Dogen's time in Japan, down to the present. But Dogen, he defined mindfulness of the body. He said, mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness. Mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness. And how I understood this when I first read it, and I still understand it, is that if the instructions are to be mindful of the body, it's very easy to hear that you're supposed to be the little agent in the control tower in the head and focus your attention, try to be mindful, like you have a flashlight and you're going to, you know, focus that flashlight on different parts of your body, focus on your, you know, that kind of way. And that creates a kind of separation, and it creates and reinforces the idea that you're supposed to be in charge, that you're supposed to be the doer. But the body's mindfulness, for me, implies that mindfulness resides in the body. Awareness is in the body. It's not something I have to do as much as something I allow for. So it's more about letting go and relaxing than it is about doing. So certainly I have to let go to a certain degree of obsessive thinking. If obsessive thinking is keeping me from being connected to my body, I have to let go or soften enough so I can feel my body. But it's not then a matter of kind of bearing down or focusing or zeroing in on my experience in the body, being up in the control tower thinking and observing and watching and experiencing from up in the head. But it's almost like relax that poor head. It's overworked anyway. And relax into the body and let the awareness, the sensitivity of the body, the awareness of the body, arise in itself. So I'll give you an example of this. If you take your finger and press it against your thigh. Now in your head, I suppose, you can know my finger is pressing against my thigh. And you might even know that there's a pressure, you're feeling the pressure. But the sensation of pressure that you feel as you push your finger against the thigh, that sensation, the knowing of it, what it is maybe in the head, but the sensation itself is in the thigh. Is that right enough? So the sensing happens in the thigh, the sensation occurs in the thigh, and so we say that the sensing and the sensation is non-dual. The sensing and sensation are not separate. You can't separate them. They arise and occur together. So the idea is to relax. So the body, that sense of awareness, the sensing occurs in the body. The body has its way of sensing, of being aware, of being conscious or something like that, being sensitive. And so the idea is to relax into that, soften into that, let go into that. And a hugely useful aspect to do this is, in fact, to relax the body. So when you sit down to meditate, if there are obvious ways to relax your body, relax it. Relax your belly. I spent a few years, my early years of meditation, learning to relax my belly because I kept my belly tense all the time. And I would relax it. Great. It lasts about half a second. And then it would tighten up because it was such a strong habit. But slowly, 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 I never got discouraged. I just kind of did it. I mean, not all the time, but, a few times every meditation. And slowly, as I relaxed and settled, my belly now stays relatively soft most of the time when I meditate. And that was really useful for me. Shoulders, face. Sometimes there can be tension in the chest or in the upper torso where we breathe. I was fascinated when I went on retreat many years ago, a three-month retreat. And the first day of the retreat, my back went out. It was kind of dramatic. I don't think it's ever gone out as, maybe it's been out as bad before again, but it was really out. And I could barely walk. I thought it felt like I was walking, like something's about to snap, break. This is terrible. I was in pain. And it happened the first day of the retreat, right? Immediately. So I had to walk everywhere really, really slow just to survive. just to, you know, at the end of the 3 months, this person came up to me and said, "Gil, it was so inspiring to watch your practice because you were into the retreat right at the beginning, from day one. I was just trying to survive." But what I did was when I sat down to meditate, I would focus on relaxing, and because I found that if more I relaxed, the band of muscles around my waist, and then the most interesting was the muscles that were on top of my thigh, and it was almost imperceptible. But if I could relax the tops of my thighs, it affected somehow the tightening in my lower spine, and I could manage to sit there for the 45 minutes. And so these little subtle movements and tensions can make a big difference. So, well, can you relax? Meditation requires a certain modicum of relaxation. If you're not relaxed, meditation doesn't really unfold, because you have to be relaxed to let this inner sensitivity show itself. And so to get out of your own way, to let go enough, and allow for, be curious in the sensations, the feelings that arise in your body. What it makes space for, trust them. Trust the sensations of your body. Not that they're always going to be pleasant, but if you feel the sensations that are in your body, rest in them and be present for them. They'll unfold, they'll evolve in such a way that it's for your betterment, such a way that the Dharma has a chance to show itself in your own life, in your own body. There's a very famous, not in Theravada Buddhism, but in Mahayana Buddhism, slogan. The slogan is, "This very body is Buddha. This very body is awakening." So that's a little bit, a long talk on mindfulness of the body. We have about 10 minutes, and it might be nice if some of you have any questions you'd like to ask about that or concerns about that practice of mindfulness of the body. Straight to the back, please.
Is it on or... Yeah, we're good. The thing that you said about relaxing your thighs when you're trying to relax your back reminded me of something that I've noticed a lot practicing the piano, trying to relax whatever I'm trying to relax, maybe my thumb or my shoulders or something like that. And I found that by focusing on relaxing my toes or like my feet or some random part of my body that has nothing to do with my shoulders or playing the piano at all, I would kind of go through the back door and relax whatever I was trying to relax a little bit. And I don't really know where I'm going with this, but I don't know. I was thinking I could draw the analogy of maybe somehow relaxing the body is sort of a backdoor way of relaxing the mind or something like that. Or maybe, maybe it's just enough of an idea.
There's a number of things which might be going on. Sometimes there's wise ignoring, because sometimes it's possible to have an attitude or being attached, clinging, wanting something that is interfering with the very thing you're trying to do. So, for example, if you want, say you're tense in your shoulders and you want to relax it, a person might want it so much that it keeps them tense and it keeps them involved. And so sometimes it's better just to ignore entirely, because if it's ignored, then it has a chance to relax. So if you're focusing on your big toe, maybe that's just can be wise, wise ignoring. It could also be that if you find something that you can relax and focus on that's pleasant in your body, that can help you, a person, get concentrated, get focused, can absorb, be involved in something besides their thoughts. And that anything that gets you focused and involved and concentrated, tends to relax a lot of the holding patterns that go on in our body.
I think it's probably both of those, yeah.
I'm relatively new to this. I've been coming here about 2 months now. And after about the third time when in the meditation, I noticed that I had this tingling in my face. But I would only have it here. And now when I meditate at home, it doesn't take very long and the tingling comes. Mm-hmm. But it's very pleasurable. And anyway, I just wondered if anybody else had that experience.
It's something like that is relatively common. And it usually comes for people when they start getting concentrated. Probably it's happening, probably your mind is getting relatively calm. Uh-huh. If you are thinking a little bit still, my guess is your thoughts are pleasant as well.
Uh-huh, yes, it's very pleasurable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. It's good.
Okay.
It's a good. Take it as a good sign.
Yes.
But don't get attached to it. and don't expect it. That's just another way of messing it up. Just let it take its course. Let it do what it wants to do. Don't it? Uh-huh. So I hand here.
So I slouch a lot, and so whenever I meditate, I always have to force my back to stay up straight.
Yes.
Because normally I slouch like this.
Yeah.
And I'm in front of a computer all day at work, too.
Yeah.
And I slouch like this at work. When I meditate and I have to keep my back straight, I find that my whole abdominal and back area get really, really tense.
Right.
It's very stressful while I'm trying to meditate and keep my back straight.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a good point because I said, you know, I talked about the importance of relaxing. If we relax too much, the only relax will be, we'll just end up, you know, blobs on the floor. There's a very important balance that has to exist between a certain tension's not the right word, but tautness or what? Tone and relaxation. And so, and to find that balance is an important thing. And so some people, what's important in order to find that balance is not relaxing, but rather strength building and stretching. And so it's possible if someone is so imbalanced that maybe relaxation is not really going to be helpful. What needs to happen is strengthening something. You strengthen their muscles, strengthen the back, strengthen the stomach muscles. And it's possible that, you know, what would help you to meditate is not more meditation, but rather is to do a routine of yoga or something strengthening to bring your body into balance from what you do at work or at the computer. And then when you come out to meditate, then you have that strength is there to hold you up. More questions? You know, remember what I said at the beginning, that you're supposed to take the teachings and turn them around and find them in yourself. And if you do that, then hopefully you have questions.
Well, first of all, I'm really happy to be here because I'm from London and a friend sent me the podcast from IMC 3 years ago and I've been listening to podcasts. And I'm only here for a week, so I'm just really happy to be here.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The question that I have relates to how I'm feeling right now. And it's a feeling of, I'm really, really excited and really, really happy, but I can feel a slight anxiety in that. And I was just wondering, it kind of struck me when you were saying, you know, to trust your body. How do you trust that anxiety?
It isn't so much you trust the anxiety, but you... you trust that it's okay to be present for it. And you trust that it's okay to feel it in your body. And as you do that, a number of things can happen. That you trust being present for it. Slowly it begins to speak to you. You can learn the thoughts, the beliefs, what's going on behind them, what's driving the anxiety. And you can question it. The other is that as you feel in your body and feel the anxiety in your body, and just make space for it, breathe with it, the body can begin softening around it, or you can begin softening about the anxiety. If it's, I don't know about, you know, anxiety for you, but when there's fear, some people the issue is not the fear, but the fear of the fear, or the aversion to the anxiety, or the concern about what it means to be anxious. And so, if you learn how to just rest with the anxiety, trust it's okay to be with it, then the secondary reactions we have begin to fall off, fall away.
Thank you very much.
So straight back.
So I pay attention to my body. I'm in my body. I trust, I feel. And when I meditate, my body has lots of ways of talking to me. I know in the traditional Zen meditation that I was taught, you're not supposed to move, you're not supposed to respond, you're supposed to just let it be. And, you know, if you itch, put up with it. If a fly lands on your face, and put up with it. And I've never really liked that approach very much.
You don't have to like it to do it.
Yeah, but I don't do it. So
what?
I don't do it. So I just wondered what your thought is about I realize there's a balance. I'm not going to, you know, be moving around every second.
Yeah.
At the same time, to me, it seems too extreme to just say, you know, you can't adjust, you can't make yourself comfortable. And I wonder how you feel about that in terms of the paying attention to the body that you were just discussing.
Okay, so a few things about that. Thank you, it's a great question. A few things. One of the traps of doing meditation, like seated meditation, the traps arises because we sit still. We're not supposed to move. And some people hold themselves still rather than allow themselves to be still. And the holding yourself still is dangerous because, you know, you get frozen or tight. And some people get more and more tight, and it's not very helpful to be tight. And then if you're in a scene, like if you come to IMC and everyone else is sitting still, and I'm supposed to be sit still, I'm not supposed to move. And then not only is it kind of not, you know, the external pressure of sitting still, but also the internal kind of ideas that I'm bracing myself against life, or I'm holding myself against something, or something terrible is going to happen. And there's all kinds of ways in which people tighten up in their body. And so the sitting still in meditation can reinforce a tendency to freeze that some people have. And then some people feel trapped in that situation, or it reinforces a certain kind of disconnect, being disconnected with oneself. So the one of the important things about mindfulness of the body is that if we trust and pay attention to the sensations of the body, then we start noticing the places we're frozen and held. And just noticing it makes a huge difference, begins the process of relaxing. If we are living in a policy of being still, or living in kind of in the reactive mode where we're dissociated, then that relaxing and opening up is not going to happen. So that's one thing. But I don't know. The other thing is that during meditation it feels like it's appropriate to move, sometimes it's appropriate to move, never do it right away. Never do it on the first impulse. But rather, before you're going to move, bring careful attention to the impulse, the desire, and also to the sensation in your body that are upon which, the sensations which you're basing the decision on. So if you're feeling restless, you feel an itch, you feel whatever you might be, what are those sensations? And then bring more careful attention to those sensations and be there with it for a while. And see what happens if you bring attention to all that. And then if you do that for a while and you still want to move, then move. But by that time, maybe you've learned about what's going on. And one of the things you might learn is it wise or not wise to move? Are you moving on a whim? Are you moving because you just don't like to be uncomfortable? And if you're moving because you don't like to be uncomfortable, you know, there are times when that's appropriate if you're going to damage yourself. But if, as I like to say, If you're only free when you're comfortable, you're not really free. And if you want to discover freedom, you're going to have to learn how to be present for discomfort and be relaxed about it, be open with it, and learn how to a certain kind of inner freedom that can exist and be there when you're uncomfortable. You become independent of your comfort and discomfort. And that's part of the advantage. One of the possibilities in sitting still through it, discomfort, is a task of finding that freedom. And if you keep moving, you won't discover it. Okay. Oh, one more? Can we take one more? If you think it's going to be quick, move it to the front, the mic. Can you wait for the mic, please?
In relation to the body, I was curious about exercise. Is there a way to do exercise in with your intention? How is it important for meditation and relax, being in your body?
Exercise?
Yes.
Well, exercise can be a great help. I think that if the Buddha had lived in the 21st century instead of back in 2,500 years ago, he would have had a ninefold path, not an eightfold path. And the ninth fold of the path would have been right exercise. Because back then they didn't need to say it because they were walking everywhere. And if we walked as much as the Buddha walked, we wouldn't need to exercise. But many of us in our society don't have a lifestyle that gives us the basic exercise that keeps us conditioned well. So I think here we need right exercise too. Is that very important? Does that answer your question? Or?
Yeah, I guess sometimes I feel very. Exercise is almost a release of emotional energy.
It can be.
It can almost be aggressive, and then at the end I feel much better. But I wonder sometimes if you know.
Oh, I see. I suppose there's many attitudes or intentions that people can have with exercise. If say you're angry, and you run to express that anger and to live that anger, so you just get it out. It might be useful momentarily or for a while. But what some people have psychologists have pointed out is catharsis, where you're acting out the emotion and acting out your anger. Tends to reinforce a tendency to be angry. So it's reinforcing the habit of getting angry, a certain kind of positive reinforcement for it. So if you're running just to discharge the energy, that's one thing. But if you're running to be angry, that's another thing. Does that make some sense? The other thing about discharging is that whenever there's a built-up charge, emotional charge or something, and the only technique we have to deal with it is to discharge it, we're not going to learn about it. And part of the advantage of something like meditation is we're not trying to actively discharge it. That might happen in the course of meditation, but we're trying to be present for it so we can learn from it what's going on. Because if you don't learn what it's all about, then you probably keep doing the same patterns over and over again. Just get tense again. Okay, so please, I would strongly encourage you during this week to look for opportunities, many opportunities, to check out your body, check into your body, discover what's going on in your body. What does your body feel like? Waiting at a red light? All kinds of situations. Check into your body. Become your body is your good friend. Be good if you can be friends with it.